You might have noticed that Pat and I are pretty fussy about our finances and our investments.
Yeah, a lot of junk doesn't make it past our bullshit detectors. But one thing that we've both used for many years is ShareSite. It records all dividends, franking credits, transactions, and performance easily in one place.
You can generate reports for income and capital gains, which makes tax time super easy. And ShareSite is completely free if you have 10 holdings or less.
So we've partnered with ShareSite to help support the podcast and provide all our listeners who upgrade to a paid plan a saving of 33% off the annual plan price. If you start with a free plan using our link, you'll still get that discount if you upgrade to a paid plan in the first 60 days.
Just head to ShareSite.com/fire and chill to get started.
Welcome to the Fire and Chill podcast, a collaboration between Dave from Strong Money Australia and Pat from Lifelong Shuffle, where we're going to have regular conversations about fire, investing, and living your best life. Welcome back to Fire and Chill. This is our first episode for 2022. Hope you've all had a great Christmas and New Year's break. Dave, did you have a great Christmas and New Year's break? Do you even think of it as a break when you're already not working?
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. I don't think of it like a break as such. I mean, I suppose it kind of is because I get to talk to other people or maybe see other people more often because they're on a break. So in a way, it kind of feels like a break. Just it feels like a different part of normal time. But no, it was quite nice.
Is this part of the year like more stressful and has like more crammed into it than like your normal parts of the year?
I think that's the case for everyone because even if you're not big on Christmas and whatever, and don't have a big family, whenever you go out to do something, it's still chaotic and busy everywhere. So you still have to deal with it regardless, I think.
Look, when you're working like 50, 60 hours a week, any time of the year is less busy than what you're normally doing.
Oh, you mean the time off? I thought you meant when you go out and do something, you know, if you go to the shops or whatever, it's just madness about like, you know, Christmas time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's always madness. But I'm just saying, like, is this general part of your year feel like more overall busy for you?
Nah.
Like more crammed in, like you're seeing lots of friends, you're seeing lots of family, you're driving around, you're buying presents, you've got just more to do.
Nah, it doesn't feel that different.
Okay.
Nah, I don't have a big family though, so that's the thing.
Okay, fair enough.
Because if I did, then that would definitely be the case where you've got, oh, I've got to see this person and this person and this person, and it just gets, you know, pretty crazy. I can see that. What about for you?
Oh, look, there's always a lot going on. But it's nowhere near as busy as trying to cram like full-time work, gym, making good food, seeing friends, doing errands and chores into like a week and a full-time working week.
Yeah.
There's no way having time off could ever feel that stressful and busy.
Yeah. I suppose that's the thing. Even if I'm feeling busy, I can just like shuffle things around that I wanted to do and just do them at a different time or on a different day. So it doesn't really matter too much.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But speaking of full-time work and being busy, you've been off for a while now and you're now in your new house. Is that right?
Yes, correct. It has been super amazing. I've had pretty well the entirety of December off and I go back to work in 1 week time from when we're recording this, essentially.
Like being a school kid again, mate. You get all of December off and then a bit of January.
I don't know. I think school kids might still have it better.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Oh, you remember those times with like such fondness. It's like, oh yeah, 2 weeks off three times a year, then 6 weeks off at the end of the year.
It's pretty awesome when you look back.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
Compared to a full-time work schedule, you just think, wow, I had so much free time.
Yeah. And now you ration your leave to like, okay, where can I use it? Oh, I need to save some for like this slightly longer holiday I want to take in a year. And oh, I need to use this for Christmas. And it's like this precious resource you control
out
very
pennies.
Tightly. Yeah.
All right, let's get back into the swing of things, mate. So for this first episode, we want to talk about some wealth habits. And what we mean by that is just generally just some different traits and the things that we see that can really help us reach our financial goals. And this is probably things that you'll see other people doing in their lives. And hopefully you even do a few of them for yourself because we think they're really important. And there's probably like We've got a few things listed here, but there's probably seriously like thousands of things that we could get into. So we'll just cover a few of them today. And I suppose we could even do a follow-up of episodes like this in the future if other points that we might want to cover, Pat.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first one is be action-oriented. This is a good one, Dave, and there's many different ways to describe this one. Sometimes you can say it as having an internal locus of control instead of an external.
I think you wrote a post about that, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this isn't only a great habit to have for fire aspirees. This is a great habit to have for absolutely anyone and anyone who wants to, you know, feel more in control of their lives and, you know, achieve their goals. So what do we mean about when we say this? There's a lot of things in our lives that we don't have direct control over. So we should focus all of our energy on what we do have control over.
And when you think about it, it's not only, I mean, it's more helpful in practical terms because you're focusing on things that you can actually do, like have tangible impacts on your own life. But in addition to that, it puts you in a better mental space when you're focusing on things that you can do rather than what you can't do. Because when you focus on things that are kind of outside of yourself and that you don't have full influence over, I think that creates like a sense of anxiety because you're worried about things that are happening outside of, you know, things that might happen to you, but you can't control those things. So it's better just to focus on what you can actually do and what you can control yourself.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And you actually see this a bit where like people become like very bitter and very like, I don't know what other word to describe it actually, very bitter just about the cards they've been dealt or the lot that they've had or like everything's all so hard for them. And I'm not to say that people definitely don't have differing circumstances that affect them, but it's just not a very healthy mind space to be in. It's not healthy for you as a person if you focus on what's gone wrong all the time instead of trying to do what you can with what you've got.
Yeah, because I mean, maybe things have gone wrong and maybe there are, you can point to plenty of, you know, crap things in your life that have happened that you wish didn't happen. Okay, so it's unfortunate that these things have happened, but like you can take stock of them, but then what? What are you going to do about it? You can't just sit there and, I don't know, wallow in sadness. You have to actually, like, it's up to you to then deal with it and try and make the best of whatever circumstances you do have.
Yeah. So like a few examples that are relevant to us in the fire community. You know, maybe you're not happy with your current job. If you had an external locus of control, you can, you know, blame other people, you can blame your coworkers, you can blame your boss. You don't do anything about it. You just kind of whinge about it all the time. And then you begrudgingly continue going to this job that you complain to everyone about how much you hate.
Are you aware of people at your workplace that do that, Pat?
Not at my current workplace.
No?
No, I haven't heard anyone at my current workplace be like that, but definitely in the past.
I remember a bunch of them at my old workplace, just like constantly moaning about, I don't know if it was, you know, the boss or what someone did or this person's doing something they're not happy with or not happy with the roster or whatever it is, management decisions. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, you get another job or you suck it up and deal with it or try and ignore it or do something, you know, but moaning doesn't really help, does it?
Definitely not. So what can you do here? You can basically consider your options. You can get a different role. You can look elsewhere, you know, look for other work you're more interested in. You can get trained and do something completely different, whatever it is, whatever you're not happy with.
Yeah.
Having that internal locus of control means you try and control what you can actually control. And you get probably better outcomes by doing that because you're not worrying about what's fair or what other people should have done or ought to have done. You're just worrying about yourself and what you can do.
Yeah, well said. Or another consideration might be, I mean, maybe you're feeling frustrated that maybe your bills have gone up recently, you know, like the cost of living. So we can be angry about the fact that the price of a certain thing has gone up, or we can look at our spending choices to try and neutralize that effect or reduce the effect of that if we can. So maybe it's certain foods have gone up in price. You could look to substitute certain food choices with other ones that haven't gone up in price, or maybe stuff that's actually gotten a bit cheaper. Or maybe it's like petrol costs, which have, you know, petrol's gone up, I think, in the last year or two, if I remember rightly. So you can figure out ways to use the car less. Or maybe it's your mortgage rate that went up, so you can, you could maybe renegotiate with the bank or switch to a different lender if possible. So as you can see, that outside things can happen, but then if you make these decisions of, you know, taking action to try and improve that outcome, you're going to feel better about it, but you're probably going to get a better result as well. And I think we're probably preaching to the choir here, Pat. Don't you think that the, you know, people in the fire community, they're already kind of action oriented anyway? That'd be fair to say.
Yeah. Taking stock of your life and setting long-term goals and working to achieve those long-term goals is, yeah, action-oriented. And this actually ties into a recent book I read. Now that I have all this spare time, I'm reading books again. It's amazing. Called Extreme Ownership, and it's basically a leadership book, but it's really ties into this really well. It's about taking ownership of your life, your circumstances, and really owning all of it.
Like ultimate accountability.
Ultimate accountability. And that it is a book directed towards leadership and leadership positions and management positions and how to be really effective, but it can be really useful for absolutely anyone. Like taking that ultimate accountability for absolutely everything means that you don't sit around and make excuses. You think, you try and do things that will influence the outcome. You think of ways you can talk to people, think of ways you can influence what everything you can do to achieve the goals that you actually want to achieve.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that. There was, I think I read a little story or a little quote the other day that was like, if you have a long-term goal that you really want to achieve, you know, you can either start working towards it or you can make excuses. So after a month, you can either have a month's worth of progress or you can have a month's worth of excuses.
It's a good one. Yeah. And that time adds up.
Yeah, it really does. All right, what's the next one?
All right. Gratitude and perspective. I feel like we talk about this at least a little bit on the podcast, Dave, having gratitude for things.
Are we just a bit more, maybe more grateful than average, or maybe we're just fortunate. So do you think there's a funny relationship with gratitude and people's lives? Because some people would assume that, okay, once your life is good, then you can be grateful for having a good life. Or is it the other way around, where you have to be grateful to notice the good things that are already in your life? Because sometimes people think, oh, well, once I have such and such, then I can be grateful about, you know, having whatever it is.
Yeah, now we're getting into some like stoicism and Buddhism, aren't we?
It's getting deep.
It's getting deep. I mean, if we're going to be like very stoic about this, it's definitely the second way around. It's like you have to be grateful first for the things you've got. There's no end goal. There's no like destination where you will finally have gratitude.
Because I think the chances are if you're not grateful for what you have now, when you have more, you probably won't be grateful for that either, because you'll have moved the goalposts a little bit further.
Yeah. You'll just want more.
So the point of that is it's important to look for not just, you know, not just randomly, but like regularly and actively look for things in your life that you can be grateful for. So, I mean, even if we don't have the perfect life, which I'm not sure anyone does, we all have plenty of things that make our life worth living, like right now, not things that we're working towards, but right now, things that are worth living for. But, you know, the way the human mind works is that the negative things often stand out more than the positive things. So our minds are biased to look for things that aren't quite right. And that's helped us in the past as a species, but it's not very helpful right now. And especially, you know, in terms of our happiness, it's not very helpful. So we need to deliberately do the opposite of that and actually look for things to be grateful and to be happy about and kind of counteract our mind's bias towards negativity.
Yeah. And we're going to be just repeating ourselves here, but there's plenty of stuff to be very grateful for, even if you're just listening to this podcast. Like, you're probably living in Australia, if our podcast statistics are anything to go by. You might have good health. Hopefully you've got good health. You might not be struggling financially. You've probably got plenty of food to eat. The government here has a pretty good safety net. You're listening to this podcast. It means you've got like a super fancy computer or mobile phone or something of that description of which you're listening to it on. That's all things to just remind ourselves of how abundant our lives really are in that sense. And you can also be grateful of like your relationships, your family, things that make you happy, your hobbies, all those sorts of things. Probably good to remind yourself about listening to this podcast in this super abundant country, one of the most prosperous countries ever, in one of the most prosperous times to have ever existed.
I think it's hard for people to accept that, even though it's true.
I think what ends up happening is a lot of people tie their identity to their sort of victimhood complex, and it gets hard to break out of that.
The Aussie battler, the famous Aussie battler that we...
Yeah, it becomes a bit of how like some people will define themselves, and that's very important to their self-identity, like that struggle and overcoming that struggle.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
So I don't know how to overcome that, but I don't know if that's necessarily a healthy way to look at things.
Oh, it's definitely not healthy. Because you're just focusing on the negative again. You've tied yourself up into this character of being a struggling person instead of stepping back and seeing what's actually kind of happening. And I feel like one of the things here is that people find it hard to be grateful because they keep moving the goalposts, kind of like we mentioned before. So when you talk about like if you have to bucket people into groups and you have rich people and poor people, the poor people or even the middle class can always look at the rich and say, oh my God, look how much better they have it. This is ridiculous. You know what I mean? But that's always the case. You won't have a state where everybody is exactly the same. That just won't happen. So, but instead of thinking like that, like if you look at the long term, even a poor person today is much, much, much better off than a poor person 50 years ago or 100 years ago. So if you had to be a poor person, when would you want to be alive as a poor person? Probably today, because poor people never used to have smartphones and never used to have air conditioning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm talking about countries like Australia.
Australia. Here. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like our listeners, obviously. So there's so many ways that even if you're not part of the upper echelon of a developed country, that your life has still gotten better despite other people getting even richer. So I think it's hard because we keep moving the goalposts and looking, we don't want to feel grateful because we're looking at people that's just slightly ahead of us, just up the ladder a little bit more. And then it makes it harder to ever feel happy about things because we're just looking, you know, at that one rung above us. And so we'll never end up being grateful for any of it, which is, I think it's a bit sad.
Yeah. But that's not to say that you can't aspire or work on, because we were just talking about long-term goals and achieving things in your life and aspiring. But I suppose it's important that you're still grateful along the way for what you got. It's not necessarily I'm sad now and then when I get something, I'll be happy. It's being grateful and still having those long-term goals and working on things that you want in your life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think perspective matters a lot, and we kind of touched on that just then. Like there's always problems in the world, and things are never perfect, but almost everything I think we can agree has improved. And that's not just from me. There's data to back that up. Wealth, the level of wealth in society, longevity, safety, technology, education and medicine and pretty much everything. So you mentioned a book that you're reading earlier, Pat. I'm reading a book right now about maybe a third of the way through it, and it's pretty damn good. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Enlightenment Now.
Who's the author?
Steven Pinker.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
You haven't read it?
No, I haven't read it.
It's pretty damn good. It goes into like global data on almost every one of these metrics going back a couple of hundred years. And he's trying to explain how, you know, even though most people perhaps in society and in the media, which is part of the issue, thinks that the world is getting unquestionably worse in almost every area, it's actually the opposite. The world is getting almost unquestionably better in every area. And that's not to say things are perfect. Things are just better than they were. So I think there's a confusion there that like 9 out of 10 is not good enough, because people look at the 1 out of 10 that's not great and be like, yeah, but what about this thing? And it's like, well, relax. It's not like saying that everything's amazing. It's just like it's much better than it used to be. So we should kind of be grateful for that and take time to notice it, because it's true. It's what's happened.
Yeah, agreed. I think I watched a TED talk with him like a little while ago, and it was basically the same thing. Like, you should be very grateful. And he went through all of that sort of stuff, how things have improved over time, despite our perceptions of the opposite happening.
Interesting. So the next little wealth habit that we want to share is to keep your wealth and your spending in proportion to each other. So if you've been listening to this podcast for a little while, you might think that Pat and myself are, you know, somehow against the idea of spending more money, that we're, you know, that we're passionately frugal just out of principle, and that we're against, you know, we're against you spending more money as you become wealthier. But that's not the truth at all. We're actually, you know, I don't want to speak for both of us, Pat, but I think we probably agree that it's completely fine to spend more as your wealth grows. And that can be, that does not have to be at all damaging to your wealth.
No, absolutely not. I think I remember, did you write a blog post about spending more every year and still having like more money overall? Or was that someone else?
I can't remember.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
I thought I remember you mentioning it either in one of our chats or on one of the podcasts where you mentioned, oh, actually, I think it was one of the podcasts because I got a question on the blog saying, I don't understand because Pat said he earns more every year, but he spends more every year, but then he also saves more every year. How are those things all true at once?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do now. Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to explain that? Because I think that's a pretty interesting concept for people to wrap their heads around.
Okay, yeah. So I'll just do it with an example, easy to follow example. If in year one you earn $100,000 and, well, that's quite a lot, but anyway, let's just stick with the even round numbers. $100,000 after tax and you save, say, $60,000 and spend $40,000 that year, and the next year you earn $110,000 after tax, then you could save $65,000 and spend $45,000. So you've increased your saving and you've increased your spending at the same time.
Mm.
So those are like nice, easy round numbers to work with, but it kind of gives you the sort of example. So each year you earn more, as long as you divert a chunk of that to additional savings, then you can also divert a little more to additional spending if that's what you want.
Yeah, I think that's important to cover because people probably wouldn't think that of us, wouldn't think that we'd approve of that maybe. But that's not the case.
No, well, it depends on what the goal is, right? So I think you and I will both agree the goal isn't necessarily to get to this retirement phase as quickly as possible, though that is a somewhat of an overarching goal. But it's also to kind of like live according to your values, live according to your ideals, try and live a good life along the way, not to like deprive yourself and live like a miser for 20 years and like count your pennies and then...
Isn't that what we're already doing?
Is that what we're doing?
Apparently, according to some people, I think.
I shouldn't have bought this house. I got it wrong. I'm doing fire wrong, Dave.
Technically, you shouldn't have that house, mate. That's above your price bracket.
Oh, no. No, I mean, hopefully you can try and live a good life along the way and build up your hobbies along the way and kind of build the life you want and continue to save as well. So balancing those is important. It's just that I suppose most of the time the balance is just completely arse about wrong, which is why when people hear about sort of us, they think it's extreme. Whereas no, it's like, spending 100% of your paycheck is extreme, or saving only 5% of your paycheck is extreme. This is just a more balanced way to look at life. I think so anyway.
Yeah. So another example, not in terms of yearly spending, but in terms of like maybe a lumpy purchase where you can keep your wealth and spending in proportion. So let's look at an example of like a new car purchase. So this would be, you know, say it's a $50,000 car. That would be an enormous drag on the wealth of someone who has a low net worth. So a $50,000 car might be 100% of their net worth, or maybe it's even more because they don't have $50,000 in savings or net worth.
Just a digression. That is actually normally the case.
Yeah.
It's actually normally the case that people will spend more on a car than their entire net worth.
Yeah.
Or at least more than their entire liquid net worth, because plenty of people have plenty of net worth tied up in a primary place of residence. But
yeah, it's always hard to come up with examples that you think are applicable and reasonable, you know, that people are going to accept, because if you come out with outlandish examples, people are less likely to consider it. So
yeah,
but no, you're right, you're absolutely right. So in that case, the car purchase would be spending 100% or more of their net worth. But if you consider someone who has, maybe they've been saving and investing for multiple years and they're, you know, on their way to financial independence, maybe they have $500,000 of net worth. So a 50 grand car, that would represent about 10% of their net worth. So much, much, much less and a less significant portion than the lower net worth person. And for somebody with $5 million, that car purchase would represent only 1% of their net worth, which is basically nothing at that point. So you can see what's happening as you become wealthier, even large purchases become less and less impactful on your net worth. So I hope that tells you something. And it even explains why people who are very rich are able to spend outlandish amounts sometimes and still keep getting wealthier at the same time. That's exactly why, because they're only spending a small portion of their net worth, even though it might be an extreme amount. It's still in proportion to their level of wealth that they have. So if you keep your spending and those big purchases and whatever to just like a modest amount of your income and a modest amount of your wealth, that's how you can keep getting richer over time while still spending more at the same time if you want to do that. So those two things are not incompatible with each other.
No, I agree, Dave. That's a good way to look at it. And if you keep getting richer, then you can actually spend a bit more money and that'll be completely fine. But how about the next one that, well, I mean, this one, wealthy people would have to do this one unless they just like lucked out. But I'd say that anyone who remains wealthy would have to keep doing this one. Even people who did luck out, they would have to form this habit if they want to retain their wealth.
What is it, mate? Don't leave me hanging.
Oh, prioritize investing. So we're both known for being pretty big fans of being frugal and finding ways to cut down expenses. But the truth is, you can spend kind of whatever you like if you prioritize building your assets first. So some people call it pay yourself first.
That's quite common, you know, if you read a personal finance book from maybe any time in the last 20 years or so. That's a pretty common
concept. I've heard it many times.
Or, yeah.
People like to get their paychecks and set aside their investment amount and just take it straight away and put it in their investment account. And the rest of the bucket that's left is their spending, like for their regular spending money.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a bad way to do it at all. It's not personally what I do, but I don't think it's a terrible way to do it whatsoever.
Yeah, I've never approached it in that way. I think we probably manage our finances in the same way. Have we actually gone through that before? I think we might have, when we had a question about how we manage our money or track our spending or something like that. I think we're in a position where we, for many years, we just spend what we spend and there's a large surplus at the end of the month and then that gets invested or whatever. Neither of us have approached personal finances in terms of writing down a detailed budget and setting aside maybe a percentage for this and a percentage for that and stuff like that. Is that fair?
That is fair, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I think we've both gotten to the point where money in our accounts isn't burning the proverbial hole in our pockets. Like we don't spend it just because it's there. I've always had an excess. So you could say that's because I earn a lot and that might be slightly fair, but I also spend, in general, very little. There are moments where obviously expenses go up, but I've never had a problem with just paying for those large expenses and then continue on that saving wagon with the excess the following paycheck.
Yeah. But I mean, not everyone's like that. So that's exactly why this pay yourself first principle or like a save first principle comes into effect, where you can put that money aside for either building up emergency fund savings or investing. And then the rest of it, you can really just allocate how you choose into the different parts of your life that you want to spend that money on. So that's I like it because it's quite simple. It's quite a simple and still effective approach.
Yeah. And it also just takes for the anxiety and the stress away for a lot of people. So they're not worrying about all their purchases. They're just like, well, I've already done the saving. I can just spend the rest. I just have to make sure it covers my essentials and I can just spend the rest. So it's not... Some people might find the process of scrutinizing their purchases a bit anxiety-inducing, or they might take it too far. So this is a way to get around that.
So it's quite mentally freeing.
Yeah, very mentally freeing. That's a good way to put it.
So like by doing it this way, you're prioritizing saving and investing. And by doing that, you're really, I want to say, guaranteeing your long-term wealth with really not much effort at all. Because once you do, if you've set this up so that money's being saved or being invested every week or every month automatically, or without you having to make all these conscious decisions about saving and whatever, it's happening by itself. You really just have to build whatever that amount is that you want to save, or that you, I mean, I suppose there's two ways you can do it. You could have a savings target, or you could have a spending limit. And they're just different ways of saying the same thing. So it depends how you want to think about it. And you can just go from there. And it, maybe it's $200 a week or $300 a week or whatever. And then you can try and ratchet it up over time. And as long as that's happening, you're going to become wealthy over time.
Yep. And those investments will just continue to grow. And for some people, not knowing it or not looking at it works even better for them. So they just set it up on automatic direct debit on their pay date. And the less they know, the less they could see, the better.
That's probably true for most of us, I think.
I think so too, yeah. Oh, there's a certain elegance and simplicity that comes with like, oh, it just happens. It's all automatic. It's like a direct debit for like a phone bill or an internet bill or something. It's like a direct debit for your saving. You know how you never think about like your phone bill because it's all direct debited?
Yeah.
Or you never think about your internet bill. It's the same thing with investing. Like you have that stuff just come straight out. You never think about it. It's like, oh yeah.
I think you want to make it, you want to make your investing so that it's, I mean, even better if it's automatic, but you want to make it like a non-negotiable commitment. Like it's like a mortgage payment, or it's like paying rent or something like that. It's just something that is going to come out of your bank, like whether you want it to or not. You just want to make it like that commitment, that forced saving. So one of the big things is people benefit from having a mortgage because of the forced saving aspect. They're forced to pay this certain amount, and it pays the debt down over time, and they build up a big chunk of equity in their house. And that's how most people's wealth is built, through the home ownership and the forced saving there. So you can try and apply this principle to your saving and investing as well by making that non-negotiable commitment, and you treat it like a bill that just has to be paid no matter what.
Yep. And making it frictionless, like internet shopping, it's like frictionless. It just happens.
One button, bang.
Bang, done. Money gone, out of the account. Okay, so another one that we'd like to discuss today is health and relationships. So we feel it's pretty important for wealthy people to make time for their health and for the important people in their lives, because having monetary wealth is completely useless if you end up sick or lonely. At the end of the day, you're kind of missing the point of of trying to build up wealth.
Yeah, it's not just to accumulate money so you can swim around in it like Scrooge McDuck, swimming around in the coins.
Oh, man, those childhood classics, you know, some important lessons in there. So it's okay to sacrifice a bit in the short term while you're working hard and you're trying to achieve your goals. But we definitely don't want to go overboard and screw this up. So working harder and longer does help you build your wealth, but it can also make it harder to stay physically healthy and mentally healthy. And it can also make it harder to spend time on your relationships, which are pretty damn important.
So there's obviously a balance there. You might not sure about, I mean, you're working very long hours. Well, actually, you've just dialed it down a bit now, Pat, but you've worked very long hours for years now.
Yes.
And so that's come at a cost to your, maybe not a large cost, but it's come at the cost of some health benefits and some time on your relationships. So that's like a trade-off that you have to make when you're trying to earn a lot and save a lot and reach financial independence. So that's been a trade-off that you've decided to make or had to make there. But you definitely don't want to take it too far, because I had this experience too. If you work too much for too long, you just become like a miserable person. You just become pretty unhappy with how things are going. So you really have to dial it down at some point and get a bit more balance back in your life and focus a bit more time on your relationships and on your health.
I was going to say, like, it's not even just the physical hour, like the physical number of hours you're spending on your work. It's you're exhausted afterwards. like you said, sometimes you become quite grumpy, especially if you're missing out on sleep.
Yeah.
So it's the physical hours you're spending there. And then it's like the effect on the ancillary hours around the work that spending that much time has.
Because you're too tired to, you're like, oh, I can't be bothered doing this, can't be bothered. Because you're just tired. You just want to rest, which is understandable.
Oh, yeah. I think little embarrassing story. I'm always like the first one to start falling asleep, eh, at like parties and stuff.
Oh, yeah, you're like, that guy.
I'm that guy, yeah, yeah. Like it hits 9:30 and I'm like starting to like fade. And I was like, what's happening? He's like, oh, yeah, I just work a lot.
No, it's understandable.
Yeah. So you don't need to be perfect. I suppose effort is what counts. So keep working on, you know, getting an extra workout in or an extra walk. Don't focus everything on making as much money as possible. And this kind of ties in with what we were saying before, Dave, how we're not really the biggest fan of side hustles, particularly if you already have a very demanding full-time job, because you need to make sure you work on your health and relationships. Otherwise, you won't make it to that goal of FIRE. You'll fail, you'll crash and burn along the way anyway.
Yeah. I think the only condition where you can get around that is if it's a hobby that you enjoy in your spare time and you're turning that into a side hustle. I think that's perfectly fine because you're going to feel like that time is well spent. I mean, you obviously have to balance that with the other things in your life and make sure you're not sacrificing too much of the other things. But I mean, if you're a side hustle can be fine if it's like a hobby and something you actually enjoy, not just like chasing more money with every spare minute of your time. So I think when we do take time out to focus on our health and, you know, enjoy our relationships, it helps us mentally refocus, not just having, like, it's nice to have time away from work, but it helps you mentally refocus on kind of what's important in life as well. And it reminds you, because if you get too narrow focused on your goal, you don't see anything else. And then it's hard to come out of it. So you kind of lose some things along the way.
Oh, you know what, Dave? This is going to be a bonanza of book recommendations. This just reminded me, have you ever read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People?
I've never read it, no. I've seen it recommended plenty of times, but I've never read it.
Okay, so one of the habits, so to speak, it's funny because we're talking about wealthy habits here. But anyway, one of the habits is called sharpen the saw. And this is exactly what it's talking about, like taking time off to sharpen. If you're this proverbial saw, you don't want the saw to go blunt and then you can't really cut the tree down effectively. They go through this whole thing in the book. So you take time off to sharpen the saw, which means rejuvenate, take a break, see your friends, work on your health, and then you can come back and work even more effectively and more efficiently down the track and keep yourself well maintained, so to speak.
Yeah, okay, good stuff. So that's that downtime and those other activities that really refresh you and energize you.
Yeah, which is different for everyone. So it's not always the same thing for people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Isn't there a saying or a quote or something that's like, if you have, I can't remember what it was, but it was something like, if you have 10 hours to cut down a tree, spend the first 8 hours or something sharpening the saw?
I've not heard that one.
So I don't know. It's not that, but it's something along those lines anyway.
Yeah, right. I suppose it's from the same thing, hey? Just along the same lines.
Same sort of idea.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I think the thing is, if you do this, like you're mentioning, Pat, it not only energizes you, but it makes your entire journey more enjoyable. Because if you get that tunnel vision, you can make a lot of progress, but then eventually you're more likely to kind of burn out because you're not getting that, you're not sharpening the saw as such. And you're more likely to kind of fall off the wagon later and feel like, oh, this is too much sacrifice. So if you keep a little bit more balance along the way, you'll enjoy it much more and you'll be able to sustain that work and that effort for a lot longer.
Yes. Yeah. It's the marathon, not the sprint.
Mm.
Yeah.
All these analogies today, mate.
Yeah. It's all that time off, you know, it just keeps the juices flowing, right?
You feel sharp.
Feel sharp. I feel like a sharp saw. All right, mate. I think that's a wrap, eh? We've covered everything we need to.
That'll do us for today, I reckon, mate.
Yeah, sweet. So we hope you have enjoyed our first episode back. If you did, we'd love it if you could share the show with a friend or family member. And thanks if you already have. We got plenty of ideas in the works, but you can always reach out if you have certain topics you want us to cover at fireandchillpod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.